Alright, time for another DoNotGuide.com video presentation. Yes, part two of whatever this is. This pointlessly convoluted rag on the idea of actually doing anything about a problem that might exist. Like, all problems should be solved with magic sparkly dust, because everything else is an act of violence. Yes, you can't stop imposers by imposing on them. Yeah, no, that's imposing. You can't impose on imposers. Anyway, that kind of thing. Just a waste of time, actually, but whatever. This is what people do on the internet. Blah, 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 blah. Unfortunately, this is what they do.
Pretty explicit. Antinatalism, on the other hand, carries a negative individual duty to not create sentient beings. The theoretical outcome of this being the cessation of human reproduction.
So we know that for a ton of antinatalists, this duty thing ends with just humans and that's it. And it ends with their own activity, which is useless, frankly, because they're not the ones imposing. So saying I am not going to impose and I do nothing to stop imposers, like it's like saying I'm not going to kill the Jews but I'll let somebody else do it. Fuck that. Okay.
And the human breeding of other animals. These result in very different worlds. One is a world devoid of sentient life, and the other is a world still containing sentient life, but
oh, yes, in a silly thing, right? So the animals aren't in human-manufactured cages. They're instead in cages manufactured by nature and genetics, and they're in all kinds of monstrous forms and, insidiously, assassin bug or something, going around stabbing things and sucking their vital fluids out and that kind of crap. So they're stuck in horrible circumstances, Freddy's nightmare kind of circumstances. And somehow, somehow you have to be a duplicitous hypocrite and think there's some sense in just stopping the one slight form of violation. You know, it's like okay to cage people in aluminum cells, with aluminum bars, but not steel bars. That kind of nonsense.
Just no moral agents that are producing sentient life. Common ground. The only similar.
So moral agency is irrelevant to the conversation. The moral agency is in our understanding and in our intelligence, and we have an obligation to define the truth, and the truth is agency doesn't have anything to do with whether something's being tortured or not. And period. It's a duplicity against your own capacity to reason to say it's okay for me to jump out of the bus and let the retard bus crash into the wall. That's ridiculously stupid.
Clarity I could identify between antinatalism and ethylism is the shared negative view of existence, i.e. being informed by philosophical pessimism. But even that is kind of questionable.
Just all these titles, instead of any, real understanding of the necessity of solution, that the problem is real and big, and we have to do better than call ourselves heroes. I'm a hero for the cause. I do absolutely nothing. I just, wear a hero sign. Yeah.
Ethylism is firmly rooted in pessimism, but antinatalism doesn't have to be. Antinatalism is often rooted in pessimism.
I hate the whole conversation about pessimism in the sense that when it's actually realism. So it's rooted in the realism of recognizing this quandary of existence. And especially the quandary of being, Frankenstein monstered with a sentient capacity, where torture is a real probability.
But someone can also be an antinatalist because of the risk argument or the consent argument.
There you go. So good enough. Yes, they can be. And again, the consent argument applies universally. It doesn't matter whether something's going to be really stupid or really smart. The fact is, that consent isn't gotten. Therefore, you don't have a right to manipulate, impose on the thing. So the creationists are the imposers, clearly. They're doing violence to the peace and quiet.
Neither of these commit someone to philosophical pessimism. None of this feels like particularly strong ground to maintain that Ethelism is the logical endpoint of antinatalism.
What's the endpoint? The endpoint is just describing the fact, where is the problem? Is the problem with humans being a little too selfish and their civilizations being too messy? Or is the problem in nature itself, in the creation of these chemistry machines that are attempting to take property, take territory? Is it in the design of the living organism, which is just a consumption machine, an imposing machine?
Antinatalism upgraded, or the non-species version of antinatalism.
So whatever. Obviously, I'm just arguing that Ethelism is the most concise, reasonable description of what the problem is. And the problem is the living organism is the problem. The machine is the problem. Period.
One can be an antinatalist and an Ethelist, but they would just simply be two views that they hold in tandem, likely both informed by philosophical pessimism. And even then, there is still that unresolved tension that exists between them, mostly in the duties that they carry.
So we can all wear a bunch of little badges or something. So I did download the stupid video so we don't have to endure the silly, frickin' wasty, gratuitously nonsensical commercial crapola. Oh. Novelty. What a cute little word. Novelty. Fuck, this is like My Little Pony or something.
Does Ethelism offer anything of philosophical novelty? Much of the
So philosophical novelty. So we know it's not novel. It's not. I'm not the first person, the first Ethelist, okay? Wasn't the first person to recognize life is shit, okay, when you look at it. And so there's nothing, yeah, there's no novelty beyond just a statement that, you know, I don't really want to use the word novelty. I want to use words like originality or unique, but I don't need to bother with the word novel. Yeah, so I'll just get rid of that because it's confusing. And instead, I'll use some more direct language. Life spelled backwards.
List worldview is simple philosophical pessimism. Take the following excerpts from Arthur Schopenhauer's On the Sufferings of the World.
Who cares? So again, all these little excerpts from people as if these people have some special quality that we instantly know they're worth listening to, that they know the truth. I mean, that's really not the argument. The argument is to get other people to understand, okay, not to recite. And, you know, making statements about what I believe, well, I don't know if that's very useful. I call myself a. Is that going to help anybody understand? No.
Happiness and satisfaction always imply some desire fulfilled, some state of pain brought to an end. This explains the fact that...
So we know it's not necessarily a state of pain, but it's a state of less than satisfaction. So, you know, but it doesn't really have to be a state of what somebody might call pain. It's more like the state of deprivation. So yes, you have to be hungry, you have to be thirsty to really gain any gratification out of these things. And we see how people struggle with their horniness, okay, and trying to find a way to make it gratifying. So we see the addictive part of it, the fact that people become insatiable as they attempt to breathe cleaner and cleaner air.
We generally find pleasure to be not nearly so pleasant as we expected, and pain very much more painful. The pleasure in this world, it has been said...
So wait, we do this. So that's the question, is most people aren't doing that. You know, most people are saying that somehow the silver lining is worth the hurricane. Go ahead, kill my kids. I'll survive it. It's no big deal. You know, and that's the attitude of most people. They are not driven from life by these horrors because they have a bit of a sadistic, ghoulish nature, as long as it's not happening too much to them. And I guess that's the bottom line. You know, as long as they are not the ones with the broken neck, you know, broken necks are sort of okay.
It outweighs the pain. Or at any rate, there is an even balance between the two. If the reader wishes to see shortly whether this statement is true, let him compare the respective feelings of two animals, one of which is engaged in eating the other. We are like lambs in a field, disporting themselves under the eye of the butcher.
Okay, so I guess this is all okay, you know, to describe the fact that, you know, the gratification of the routine hunger certainly isn't as a feeling... a good exchange for the horrifically unpleasant torment and torture endured by the thing being, disassembled.
He chooses out first one and then another for his prey. So it is that our good days, we are all unconscious of the evil fate may have presently in store for us. Sickness, poverty, mutilation, loss of sight.
Yes, and all the stuff we're causing by displacing and by, you know, being high maintenance. So people do actually starve on Earth, and we actually do waste food that could feed them 100 times over, that kind of thing. It's just a fact that our inefficiency in existing is another type of strangulation and torment and torture and murder. So the little murders, you know, might add up to more than the obvious big murders of having a earthquake and a building fall on top of you, and you have to spend the next 24 hours slowly dialing.
Reason. And this passage is from his essay on the vanity of existence. Life presents itself chiefly as a task. The task, I mean, of subsisting at all. Gajna.
Yes, right. So it's just the struggle. You have a choice. Struggle or die, or struggle and then die. I mean, you know, there's no good choice. So of the choices as reasonable procrastinators, we basically just say, well, let's just save the dying for some other day. Okay, I'm really not in the mood. And we'll just do the struggling thing instead. So we'll die, we'll have like the half death to keep putting off the whole death. But yes, obviously we just add up a bunch of halves that end up being much bigger than the whole death. And obviously there's lots of examples now where the industrial medical complex has people perpetually dying for 20 or 30 years. I mean, they just go from one thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next mitigation. So I don't frankly want to die more than once. So it seems kind of obvious to evade half dying and then half dying and then half dying, because that's going to add up to a lot more than one death.
If this is accomplished, life is a burden, and then there comes the second task of doing something with that which has been won.
So it's not so much about this, what is your life, because your life is only one piece of the puzzle, and so the idea that I'm not feeling enough of a burden to call it shit is irrelevant noise, because the real question is there, in the pool of sentience, you know, is there sufficient suffering to negate whatever the song and dance is that you're selling as some great accomplishment of a living thing? And it's meager and crude pleasures, and they're really crude pleasures, don't add up to anything close to the price being paid in terms of the bad outcomes. The bad outcomes well outweigh the good outcomes in the overall scheme of life on Earth. The fact that a few human beings find a way to navigate and become immune to those bad days is not very relevant.
Of warding off boredom, which, like a bird of prey, hovers over us, ready to fall whenever it sees a life secure from need. These passages seem almost identical to the worldview that Ephelism presents.
So Ephelism prevents a worldview, okay, and that's the worldview. And I don't know, was that all that eloquent? It didn't seem all that perfect to me in terms of it went from animal being eaten to human being bored.
These descriptions of the brutality of nature and the inherent violence and death in evolution from evolutionary biologists themselves. This example is from Charles Darwin's own autobiography. That there is much suffering in the world, no one disputes. Some have attempted to explain this in.
So Darwin had like 8 kids, so obviously not very far thinking. Okay, so yes, great at doing his science, but pretty shitty at doing basic lifestyle logic. And he lived sort of as an inheritance lord kind of thing, very privileged kind of life, blah, 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 blah.
Reference to man by imagining that it serves for his moral improvement, but the number of men in the world is as nothing compared with that of all other sentient beings, and these often suffer greatly without any moral improvement. A being so powerful and so full of knowledge as a god who could create the universe is to our finite minds omnipotent and omniscient, and it revolts our understanding to suppose that his benevolence is not unbound. For what advantage can there be in the sufferings of millions of the lower animals throughout almost endless time? And
Right, so it seemed like a long way to say God is a ridiculous idea, so we're stuck just recognizing that we're just part of a brutal carnage of fucking meat grinder. That's all it's for. It just grinds the meat to make subtle changes to organisms to give them a temporary advantage in some struggle. And we know that most of the species have gone extinct. So most of the experiments were a failure. So you tortured a bunch of organisms to fail. It's pretty stupid.
here's a similar observation in Richard Dawkins' book, River Out of Eden, A Darwinian View of Life.
Yeah, well, Dawkins is a real lunatic. So this is a guy who can't figure out that animals feel and that we shouldn't be torturing them. So he's that ignorant.
The total amount of suffering per year in the natural world is beyond all decent contemplation.
You contemplate it all the time, so he calls it the greatest show on earth. That's another title of one of his books. He had a conversation with a animal rights advocate, and he couldn't even say, "Yeah, well, that's completely true. I'm a disgusting hypocrite, and I really ought to change my attitude and behavior because, fuck yeah, I'm imposing torture on organisms and exploiting them like a slave owner. So fuck me." But he didn't have enough character to do that. Fuck Dawkins.
The minute it takes me to compose this sentence, thousands of animals are being eaten alive.
Right, so how's it the greatest show on fucking earth, you fucking moron? I mean, it's just so gross.
Others are running for their lives, whimpering with fear. Others are being slowly devoured from within by rasping parasites. Thousands of all kinds are dying of starvation, thirst, and disease. Nature is not cruel, only pitilessly indifferent. This is one of.
Yes, right. It doesn't have a brain, so it obviously can't be doing it on purpose. But let's not imply that cruelty requires volition, because it really doesn't. A kid playing with a, pulling the wings off a fly isn't being cruel, he's being fucking ignorant.
Are the hardest lessons for humans to learn. We cannot admit that things might be neither good nor evil, neither cruel nor kind, but simply callous, indifferent to all suffering, lacking.
Okay, so again, this callous part is pointless to talk about nature being stupid. Yes, nature is stupid. It's unintelligent design, and the very fact that it is means it has no capacity to moderate this radioactivity, this very. This very powerful function of sentience. And so it squanders it spills it gratuitously all over the place. Torture is just being spilt because it doesn't know how to, eject discreetly.
All purpose. Anyone vaguely familiar with Ephelism will recognize these kind of descriptions. Even some of the common added.
Yeah, and they'll have no respect for the people making them because they're weak and pointless. It's horrible, isn't it awful? Well, let's all have a ham sandwich and forget about it, because fuck that, it's no fun. It's not a good show. So, I mean, fuck Benatar, fuck Dawkins, fuck these weak, idiots who sit there and, make an argument like a Buddhist loony that doesn't make any sense at all. Just let's all just find some philosophical, some psychological escapism and pretend there's no real problem. There's a real problem. So these are assholes who would, during the Holocaust, they would just sit on their deck and watch the sunset and pretend there's no problems in the world and certainly wouldn't be imposed upon to actually say something or do something. Fuck that. Fuck them.
Images in Ephelism are borrowed from other areas of philosophical thought. Take, there is no need to create new need.
So why is this? Why do we always have to go back in history? we can't articulate an argument. We have to go back 1,000 years or 500 years or to some authority to make arguments. I mean, it's just nonsense.
This is lifted straight from anti-frustrationism. Look at these passages from Christopher Fehig's essay, A Pareto Principle for Possible People. We don't do any good by creating satisfied extra preferences. What matters about preference?
We don't do any good by creating satisfied extra preferences. So we have to figure out what the satisfied extra preference is. Oh, hilarious. Double heroin, does it work? Is that what he's saying? I don't know. What's he saying?
Is not that they have a satisfied existence, but that they don't have a frustrated existence. We have obligations to make preferers satisfied, but no obligation to make satisfied preferers. Another point of discussion in...
Oh, jeez. I mean, isn't that convoluted mush? So why even dig that up? First, he's a no-name. Second, it's... what was that? I mean, that's like verbal soup vomit stuff.
Ephelism is the red button, as I've already mentioned. Again, this was devised back in 1955, with its original formulation being a reductio ad absurdum to negative utilitarianism. And very quickly, if you want to hear my thoughts on the red button and a discussion that I've had on it, you can find those both linked in the description.
Oh, brother, another citation. So that's whatever, 10 of them in this video to his own products.
None of this is to make an accusation of plagiarism towards Ephelism, or even to say that we should not borrow ideas from established philosophies.
Ah, oh, brother. So the whole point of me making the word is to make a distinction from the other sources, the lame and useless mush of the past. Schopenhauer's two books of bullshit that doesn't say anything. that kind of crap.
And thinkers. We as individuals can be pluralists and draw from different philosophical schools, but it is just to say that there may not be anything particularly novel in Ephelism.
Oh, brother. Except the simplicity that's been diagrammed over and over again. That, it's a war against imposition, that we are just robots. The robots just have this mechanical function to seek, based on these silly impulses. There's no cancer to cure. there's nothing to fix in the universe except the mess we make by being here.
Ephelism seems to be a constellation of pre-existing views, including philosophical pessimism, negative utilitarianism,
I mean, it's just amazing that they have to give all of these silly religions their own little word when it's all just religion.
Frustrationism, existential nihilism, and maybe... So
nihilism obviously would have nothing to do with the subject, because clearly the subject is it's not a single-player game. There. That's one of the biggest pieces of Ephelism, is recognizing it's not a single-player game. It's not about how good you have it. It's about how bad they have it.
Natalism, but this is all repackaged in what is often firebrand rhetoric and metaphors. Having said that, whilst Ephelism doesn't seem to provide anything of philosophical novelty, it does seem to be...
So they're all seeking philosophical novelty. That's what we need. We need more novelty in our philosophicalness. I mean, it's just, we need better costumes for the pantomime play we're doing. Oh, disgusting.
a term that denotes a specific extinctionist view that has some following. As such, maybe it does serve as a term, some value in identifying.
So again, the whole idea, the fact that he's been using the word through the whole video, pointing out there's a specific subject that has all this nuance to it to describe, and then he says it's not a real subject. I mean, it's just, what the fuck? It's not a real subject, but I just spent 30 minutes giving you every bit of little minutia nuance about this word. But forget about it, because it's not really a word. It's not a concept. We'll call effulis something else. That somehow it doesn't, there's no purpose in using the word effulis to describe the fact that you are, it's really, there was no word for anti-life. Just, that's why the word was invented, is because there really wasn't a word that got to the core that this is about these DNA machines. It's not about a particular type of machine. It's about any one of them that has a brain, period. Brains are the thing that creates feelings. Feelings are the thing that has value. And the fact is they're going to have they're going to experience a lot more negative value than positive value. There, the end of the subject. All right, anyway, take a break. Sorry about the noise. Matt should be back and continuing.
In this specific view, a sentiocentric form of extinctionism grounded in philosophical pessimism.
Grounded in philosophical pessimism sounds like your pessimism isn't for the very reason, okay, that all these sentient organisms are being horribly consumed in this silly fucking pointless DNA farce.
Components are already captured by existing philosophies, but this specific combination of views seems to have some following.
I mean, it's just, you know, this whole optimism pessimism thing, what is, you know, it doesn't go anywhere, because there's plenty of pessimists who are pessimistic because, oh, we're not getting to our transhumanism quickly enough, or we're, you know, they're bitching about something that's, you know, exactly the opposite, you know, that we're not progressing fast enough, we're not flying garbage cans and all that kind of crap. You know, it's not a Dick Tracy enough world for them. You know, so what's the point of talking about philosophical pessimism? It doesn't mean anything. There's lots of religious people who are all real pessimistic because, you know, Jesus isn't coming back very fast. You got stuck on a train somewhere and, you know,
and so it seems valuable to have some identifying term for it.
Oh, God, I don't know. It seems valuable to have an identifying term. Why? Wait, valuable how? How is that valuable? So, yes, it's good for us to be able to say what we are. You know, you're pro-molestation, anti-molestation, you know, pro-death, against death, you know, that kind of thing. So that's okay, but and then the whole point of the word effulism is just to say, yes, this is the reason why I am anti, okay, what is the facts of life.
Before I get into any critiques of effulism, I want to express where my...
Oh, this wasn't a critique. Oh. So when you said it lacked novelty, that wasn't saying it has a very small penis. Yes, it was, moron. Ugh.
Sympathies lie. I too hold a view of existence that is captured by philosophical pessimism. If you want to check out my video...
Oh, brother. So another, this is just so, disgusting. I mean, it's one thing to reference, you know, to say, look, if you need an argument about religion, here it is, blah, 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 blah. But just leave a list and, you know, you don't have to sit there and do it in the video.
On that, I've linked that in the description. I do think it would be better if there were no sentient life in the universe. But just because I think that it...
It would be better doesn't mean I think I should have to do anything about it. It's not my job. Yes, that's what he's saying. It's really what he's saying. It's not my job.
Would be better if sentience never arose. Doesn't mean I think we should embark on some campaign to eradicate it from the universe.
Right, so rape is bad, but don't stop it. Molestation is bad, don't stop it. Gratuitously wasted suffering, torment, slavery, imposition is bad, but I'm not going to do anything about it. What the fuck does that have to do with me? Cunt.
I also share a concern for other animals. Domesticated animals are treated as slaves, and they are systemically butchered and tortured on a mass scale.
They have it pretty fucking good compared to.
Ale. Why would animals also...
I mean, except for the ones that, you know, frankly, people cling too long to their animals and impose surgeries and all kinds of crap, and that's very ugly.
So face great hardships, and they're ones that they themselves have very limited capacity to be able to remedy. As John Stuart Mill said in his essay, Nature.
Oh, brother. So he basically said, look, I'm not going to do anything about it. And okay, yeah, people own pets, that's so well. I'm not going to do anything about that either. And I'm not going to do a damn thing about a goddamn thing. Okay, fuck you.
In sober truth, nearly all things which men are hanged or imprisoned for doing to one another are nature's everyday performances. The phrases which ascribe perfection to the course of nature can only be considered as the exaggerations of poetic or divine.
Oh, shit. Blah, 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 blah. yeah, the fact is that nature's a criminal, and the fact is humans are criminal. It is criminal to impose on kids. It's criminal to indoctrinate. It's criminal to do all these things, and yet those things are applauded by the culture as some sort of meritorious thing, you know. It's just a fact. It's rewarded, you know, quite heavily, in fact, now. Where, I mean, if, you know, everybody who's going to be a sports winner is going to be created, okay, from birth.
Emotional feeling, not intended to stand the test of a sober examination. No one, either religious or irreligious, believes that the hurtful agencies of nature, considered as a whole, promote good purposes in any other way than by enticing human rational creatures to rise up and struggle against them.
Okay, I fell asleep.
I think that we should, in a considered manner, in principle, intervene to help wild animals.
Well, so what is this? In a principled manner, help to intervene, blah, blah, blah. What does that mean? You could go pet them. What? You know, it's just, they're there. It's okay. So when they're getting eaten by the lion, you can go over there and, you know, just tap on the forehead. Say, there. It's okay. Okay, dry your tears. You know, fuck you.
As and where we have a good reason to think that we can do so effectively. If people,
so by your definition, so he's the great definer of what's an appropriate intervention. Yeah, fuck. Oh, God. So again, is culling valid? So if there's, you know, if animals are going to outreach their, you know, capacity to stay within their boundaries, so to speak, and they're going to invade, you know, human cities or something. Should anything be done to stop them? Anything at all?
People don't share this sympathy. I really encourage them to look into this topic. One great essay to start with is Debunking the Idyllic View of Natural Processes by Oscar Horter. Having shared my sympathies, here are my...
Okay, his sympathies. He has no sympathy with anything they'll actually fix a problem. So he's completely unsympathetic to any suggestion that will actually fix something, because to fix something means you had to impose your fixing, and that's wrong.
Critiques. Nirvana fallacy.
Oh, brother. So this will have nothing to do... Obviously, Nirvana has nothing to do with evilism. Your personal escape, okay, isn't the subject at all.
My first critique of ethylism is that I believe it commits the Nirvana fallacy, or the perfect solution fallacy. It presents what is claimed to be a perfect solution to...
It's just, where, who's presenting this perfect solution? Where is that? I mean, beyond the fact that the whole universe just, you know, blowing up or something... You know, the instantaneous complete destruction of material complexity. Outside of that possibility, where is the argument for the perfect solution? Who's arguing for their, hey, there's a perfect solution. Let's all just take the never wake up, Barry. You know, what the fuck is this shit?
All problems, ending all suffering by ending all life, but one which is completely implausible. Imagine
so again, he says it's implausible when the earth has done this over and over again, okay, where it's completely changed the boundaries, okay? There's no dinosaurs, right? So let's just say that brain enabledness is like dinosaurism. Well, clearly there's probably a catastrophe that could take place that would take out all the brain-enabled organisms. Yeah. So again, just bullshit. You can't solve the problem. You can't dig. You can't. When, of course, it's just a physics argument, frankly. What do you know about physics, douchebag? What do you know about the physics shit for brain? Do you know anything at all about the physics of it?
Imagine someone devising a whole philosophy around ending global traffic accidents by putting a total ban on the use of vehicles. Yes.
So who did that, right? Who suggested that somehow banning it is going to be enough? And obviously the argument was is that all you really have to do is incentivize it. And we know that the only thing you have to do is educate children. The whole thing is a huge, we win gigantically if you just educate children. So if they're educated, they don't replicate sufficiently to maintain existence. Fact. So there's the draconian solution. Educate humans. Yeah, ooh, how scary is that?
This is logically possible, and it would stop all traffic accidents, which are a problem, just like it's logically possible to end all sentient.
So this is obviously some kind of, you know, this is the bait and switch and the change in the goalpost and straw man. Yeah, this is the real, this is the grass man or something. It's not even good straw. Bullshit argument. Okay. Clearly there are ways of engineering, okay, the demise of the human, the animal biosphere. It's an engineering problem. It can be engineered.
Life to stop suffering, which is also a problem, but both solutions are extremely implausible. So it seems like...
So again, he's saying that based on what physics? So what law of physics says it's implausible that there's some thermodynamic problem, some energy problem somehow? There's no problem. There's nothing preventing it. And like I said, the very fact that we're, just look what the little bit of temperature increase will cause on Earth. You know, the catastrophic flooding, all kinds of mayhem.
There's very limited value in discussing them when trying to address the concerns that they are concerned with.
Yeah, why discuss the specifics of all of these technical arguments about the physics of engineering the terminal event? We're a long way from getting the humans to agree on it in the first place and, being respectful of democratic process. That's the first... You don't go to war until you've at least negotiated a solution. So first negotiate. And that's the process we're in. We're in the process of negotiating, and you're saying to the opposition, don't negotiate. No. Their whole theory is implausible and impossible, so don't listen.
With making the perfect the enemy of the good.
Oh, brother. So this is the scary part. Somehow it's good if we just keep it alive and let it die forever. that's the good.
A second criticism of Ethelism is that it seems to encourage utopian thinking. I have seen endless fanciful thought experiments conjured up, like the red button to supposedly deliver us from suffering.
So again, the red button was just a point made about confidence. And the fact that somebody has to act. So it's the lifeboat argument. You're on a lifeboat. You have a gun. All right. You know that if you leave it to democracy, everybody dies. Okay, horribly. That's what the democracy is going to vote for. Everybody's going to vote to live. And so they're not going to vote for what needs to be done. So do you captain the boat or do you not? So we're back to do and do not do, and whatever democracy or social contract or all this other crap doesn't mean anything. What's the outcome going to be? Disaster or success?
be much better if those minds and that time were put towards achievable goods. Playing a role in smaller changes is not going to solve the whole problem of suffering, but it's actually...
It's not going to do anything. It's not even going to get near it. It's not even going to brush up against it, because the whole problem is in the animal sphere. It's not in this human thing. So all of these little human trivial bullshit doesn't mean a goddamn thing. Because all the real suffering is in that biosphere, okay? And you're not going to be able to break that accidentally. You're going to have to break that on purpose.
Achievable. There are whole organizations out there, established groups of people working on practical means of alleviating
suffering. Oh, so it's just such a waste. Yeah, yes, and somehow the Ephelists are opposed. Somehow they're saying, don't spend any money on morphine. Don't spend any money on mitigating pain and suffering. Now, none of them are saying that. They're all saying, yes, we should have a universal right to die. We should be freed from this arrogant putzes like you telling us what our obligations are, and we should choose for ourselves. That kind of thing. So bullshit on this, that there's some, you're sacrificing, gene therapy because you believe in Ephelism. You're going to distract all the, you're going to suck up all the resources on the Ephelism thought. Just having the idea of Ephelism consumes billions and trillions of dollars worth of human resources. No, it doesn't consume a goddamn thing. It's a thought, for fuck's sake. God damn it. What a pile of shit.
We shouldn't make the perfect the enemy of the good, especially when the perfect seems to be a pipe dream. And to be clear, Ephelism doesn't preclude someone from supporting these smaller, short...
Well, you just implied that it did, you fuck! You're saying that somehow you are going to compromise the good, okay, by trying to do the gooder. Somehow trying to do the gooder will completely distract you and you'll throw away all this good stuff. You fucking lying sack of shit. It's what you just did.
I'm not implying that somehow Ephelism could get in the way of the good. I'm just stating that Ephelism gets in the way.
Fuck you.
Time efforts to do good. Though I worry that Ephelism can draw focus away from more...
How does it draw the focus? What it can do is make people recognize that, yeah, saving a life is just perpetuating or, extending a life, and that it doesn't undo death and it doesn't undo the harm. So what's the point in a way? That there's a point where, hey, it doesn't make any sense. And he's saying that kind of a conversation is somehow some horrible impediment to our the thing. What we should be doing is wearing our little pink ribbons and saying, oh, we must cure this and we must cure that and we must fix this and we must fix all this little trivial shit. So I would argue he's the problem, right? He's a Band-Aid maker, all right? He doesn't want to invest anything in cures. He just wants to invest in fucking goddamn Band-Aids. Go be a nurse or something if this is what you want to do with your existence. You don't want to prevent. You don't want to stop. Instead, you want to sit there and feel people's pain in your fake and phony way.
Achievable goods to a grand solution that is liable to the other critiques that I'm laying out. Justifying violence and a lack of appreciation.
Oh, fuck you.
For fallibility.
This is just a fuck you statement, justifying violence. When you're talking about people incarcerating animals and torturing them and brutally killing them. Oh yes, we're the violent fuckers. Yeah, fuck you. God damn, what a hunk of goddamn piece of ugly, stupid, moronic shit. Get what you deserve, you dumb, fucking ugly piece of shit.
The critique is that this form of utopian thinking can encourage people to commit or support horrific acts. In any realistic scenario,
Where exactly is that, you fucking lying sack of shit? Where is there a single argument in provoking people to go out and kill anything or commit an act of violence against anybody? Where is that? And I can play hundreds of my videos where I've said exactly the opposite. It's completely unproductive for the animal rights activists to go act up too aggressively, because then that's all they look like. Oh, fuck you.
supports such an endeavor would presumably support the one that minimizes harm. But in reality,
I mean, I've pointed out we already have won the argument. The only enemy we have is ignorance. Human ignorance. Stupid humans breed. Stupid humans do lots of other things that are really bad too. So yeah, let's have a war against stupid humans.
It's difficult to identify which means would actually minimize harm. And even then, it's not obvious that we would actually be able to implement that means in practice.
So again, more bullshit that we somehow can't do anything regarding our behavior to decrease the magnitude of the biosphere's liberty to torture, when of course we can.
We also need to account for human fallibility. Humans can be wrong about the conclusions we draw. We need to be really careful when drawing conclusions that justify enacting significant violence on others.
So again, who has suggested acting violence on others? Where has that even been a suggestion? That any of that was necessary? Behind somebody saying, well, you know, in every conflict, you know, there's a point where you have to have the civil war, or da-da-da-da-da. But that's not even being what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that we've already won. Okay, all you have to do is have intelligent humans on Earth, and this isn't even an argument. Then everybody's basically just going to have an argument or a conversation about means. You know, how do we implement? But there's not going to be any substantial argument about the fact that we're already heading there, because the majority of people won't be breeding sufficiently to replace the population. So the demise of the human race would already be a given, and it would just be, the conversation would just be about the people, the members of the human race who were concerned for the animals, would be using their energy to say, well, we're going to have a backup plan for the animals. We're not going to just die. We're not going to sit there as the bus driver and have a heart attack and have no backup. Something like that. But I mean, what is this? I mean, this whole idea to try to contrive this into a story about violence. Fuck you. It's like slandering suicidal people with the term they're doing violence to themselves. Fuck you.
Many despicable acts have been committed throughout history by people who were convinced that they were doing good or even had the solution.
Oh, and that's our fault. That's the Ephelus fault somehow. And again, we're guilty by what association exactly? Where has there been any defense of any violence beyond the violence that happens for good causes? Beyond the Americans showing up in Europe to save the day? Beyond that, give me your description of what's been defended as violence or terrorism or any of that crap. You fucking liar.
To all of our problems. It's also worth noting that this standard for violence would also have implications for other situations. Under this standard, presumably someone would be justified in ending the lives of an isolated population on an island that...
Anybody is justified if they merely have a rational argument that can't be countered. So yes, it's just the way it is. I'm sorry, that's the way the world works. Okay, if somebody has a belief... and they don't have any doubt about it, what are you supposed to be arguing? That they're not supposed to invest in what they believe in the deepest part of their existence? So I'm not defending, of course I would never defend some religious kook that blows up an abortion clinic, but the fact that that's going to manifest in human beings is just a fact. I can't find fault with the terrorist who flew the goddamn airplanes into the buildings, in the sense that all I can see is how you got to be damn courageous, you know, to go down with their ship. So obviously they had a pretty secure confidence that things are going to be better because of the act. So how do I undo that? How do I undo the fact that human beings have that perception? And how are you going to argue that you know they should have known which side was right and which side was wrong? They should have somehow known that, even though they spent their whole life indoctrinated into a completely opposite belief system. So the whole argument here is people, human beings need to be educated so they don't fall into the trap of being deluded morons, jihading for a fable.
The wider world has no contact with or knowledge.
I mean, look, you could even say all of these people that have kids are deluded. you know, they have this delusion that it's all going to work out just fine, that everything's going to be just fine, that it'll be worth it, their kid will be just so happy with their decision, blah, 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 blah. So all those delusions are okay, and the violence that ends up taking place because of those delusions is all okay? Fuck you. I mean, he's just trying to pigeonhole the anti-people into being the terrorists when we know who the terrorists are the fucking pronatalists.
Job and will not come to learn of their demise if violence was the only means. And that's because for all intents and purposes, on this local scale, that would be the extinction of sentient life. If this seems at all troubling, then it should give someone hesitation for drawing the same conclusion about all sentient life generally. Now, to clarify, I'm not saying that violence is never justified. We can all think
you
of
just
instances
said it.
Where violence is justified, like self-defense.
You're just saying, what, my definition is okay, your definition sucks. Yeah, okay, same to you, fuckhead. What useless tripe. I'm not saying. You just said it. You just implied that even the thought of, we might have to go to war to solve slavery. Well, fuck that. Fuck that. Yeah, we can't do that. Fuck you. This is obviously not the hero of the story.
Saying is that utopian thinking can lead us to rationalize much more violence than we're actually justified in inflicting. Violence that in reality probably isn't going to achieve.
So what's your example? Sure, give me these great examples you have from history where, something besides one lone lunatic. Okay, besides that, where's your evidence of this tragedy of the rebel fighters?
Leave the thing that we want it to. Hard to verify end goal. My fourth critique of Ethelism is that it has an end goal that seems to be almost impossible to verify.
So again, what's this verify thing? What is that? Why does it? What, somebody has to hang around to verify? Oh, too ridiculous.
How would you know when sentient extinction has been achieved? Leaving.
Well, how do you know there's no God? Yes, just too ridiculous.
Even some life behind could allow the return of the circumstances that
failure is a possibility, so try to eliminate all possible avenues of failure. So what do you want? He wants a double doomsday machine. So we have to build a doomsday machine, okay, and then we have to build one in space. And so then the AI in space can analyze the function of the doomsday machine and figure out whether it left anything behind. And if it's anything's left behind, then it can blow it up a second time. How's that? And then we could have a third one on Saturn. That's the third backup. And then we could have a fourth one on Uranus. And yes, they would all take care of the situation. Fucking asshole.
Was aiming to eradicate. This again seems like very shaky ground for the justification of violence and
So again, the justification for violence. What violence has anyone justified or even suggested as anywhere close to the near future? Anything possible? What? Where is that? I mean, the very fact that I guess this idiot thinks that somehow the Muslim Jew thing is going to just disappear. It's just going to go away. Yeah, someday it's just going to go away. It's going to just evaporate into... Oh, yes, it was just a semantics argument.
I mean, human reproduction. Even if this isn't a flaw in the Ethelist ideas, it is a flaw in carrying out Ethelism in practice. And whilst the Ethelist view can be...
So you could argue that being a Jew is being decisive. I mean, divisive. You know, that you're provoking the problem. So, you know, the simple solution is to stop being a Jew. And then the problem is solved. We don't have a Jew problem anymore because there's no Jews to be a problem. Is that viable? Is that realistic? Oh, hilarious.
Restricted to just Earth rather than the whole of...
And this is in the context where that's exactly what's happening to natalism. Natalism is choosing to become non-existent. It's the losing philosophy among intelligent brains. Fact.
the universe, which would make this less of an issue to verify. It wouldn't eradicate the issue. Lack of clarity on individual duties.
Oh, brother, I didn't know we all had an individual duty because we call ourselves an Ephilist. Oh, you're full of duties now. Here's your whole list. You gotta clean this, you gotta wipe that, you gotta wash that. Fuck you. This isn't about chores.
Finally, my fifth critique is the lack of clarity surrounding individual duties. I've already spoken about this, so I'm not going to go over it again here, but the relationship between an individual's duties under Ephilism and this collective duty it attributes...
So what is this collective part anyway? There's some group duty? I mean, it would be nice if an organization, you know, just the idea of having organizations and you get your tax-exempt status, you do certain things to make the organization more viable, but all those basically are just cheats, and that's what has a bunch of shitty ideas being facilitated, is through this process of organizing organizations, when all there really is there should be a way for people to support simple missions. Like, you could just have this idea that we're going to spend some money to bribe people to not have kids in the third world or something. And people could just contribute to a direct cause that does that very thing.
It's to humanity to bring about sentient extinction really needs to be examined and fleshed out. There are potentially major conflicts that haven't been fully laid out, let alone rectified.
Oh, like, so you had all this time in this video to lay them out and rectify them, so why didn't you do that? Oh, who knows?
So, hopefully that has sketched out some of the conceptual terrain.
The conceptual terrain by a duplicitous, hypocritical, shit-talking know-nothing. Thank you very much, Mr. Know-Nothing.
Of Ephilism. I've gone back and forth on Ephilism and have been very...
All right, so you're a wishy-washy, mishy-mushy, ridiculously silly, fence-walking pile of shit. And as I've stated, those are probably, you know, on both sides of a war, those are the first people that should get shot, are the fence walkers. Just a nuisance.
Confused on the topic in the past. I used to use the label myself and then stopped once I got...
Right, you're just a spy. you're an infidel.
Got a better understanding of it. If you're at all confused on the issue in either direction, that's completely understandable.
I don't know what's confusing. There's no God. We're biological machines. It's a deterministic universe, meaning the biology has to slowly acquire function. You know, it doesn't get it instantaneously. The universe doesn't just bestow you with knowledge and understanding. You have to go through all this hard work to get it. Blah, 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 blah. Life, death, struggle, struggle, eek, eek, gurgle, gurgle, blah.
Involves big and complicated ideas. This world is messed up and sometimes it's hard to know what to do.
Oh, fuck. It's just so ridiculous. So I was an Ephilist. I just didn't know it. You know, when I was 7 years old, I could figure out, this is way too messy. What the fuck am I doing here? All right. I'm not stupid enough to sit there and play a game this dumb. Why am I in Vegas? Okay, I didn't drive here. I don't want to gamble with anything. Okay, especially my, you know, the precious.
If you're motivated by the ideas behind Ephilism, my suggestion would not be to spend time devising means around a fanciful goal of bringing about sentient extinction.
So who's doing that? I mean, again, the goal is just, it's just a technical means thing. You're just saying, is there some way to catastrophically fuck with Earth? And of course, the technology exists. It's doable. Blah, blah, blah. It just has to be your intent. It's not going to happen accidentally. You're not going to, you know, go to the bathroom and shit the, you know, doomsday device.
To work on more practical means of reducing harm. Increasing the access to contraception, working towards...
La, 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 la. Rubbing the little blue pony. Rub the blue pony.
The world where there are strong legal protections for animals and their property status.
Oh, yeah. This is whatever this is, right? The Strong Legal Protection Act, you know, that'll be nothing. Just like all the right to die legislation that's nothing. Just a placeholder for the real thing. No. Just an empty gesture, pretending we've solved the problem and it solves nothing.
This is abolished, and supporting research into the methods of alleviating the suffering of wild animals.
Why would you waste the resources on that? Okay, when the argument is, no, let's waste the resources on educating people about the fact that we evolved on planet Earth, because that's the big win. I mean, I wish they did that. You know, they did surveys and they just say, let's find all the people who believe we evolved here on Earth and then see what their procreation numbers are. Like atheists, even. You know, see what's the birth rate for atheists versus Muslims? Yeah. And it'll tell you a lot about what the fucking problem is.
And preventing the potential rise of sentient AI. These seem like more practical.
So that this is just, the silliest of baby talks. There's no prospect that a synthetic AI that is really just a, what do you call it when somebody just pulls crap? You know, it's just an algorithm. Will ever be sentient. There's no way to make sentience. There's no way to engineer it. There's no way to do the laboratory experiment. Because the thing that's going to feel is going to feel long before you've created the mechanism for it to say, I feel. You're not going to be able to make the feeling part connect to the thinking part. And the thinking part isn't even real thinking, because our thinking is actually connected to feeling. But anyway, I mean, it's just displays his ignorance that he would even say that there's a prospect of those two things becoming connected. Algorithms that, spider the internet and collect words is somehow going to be sentient. There's absolutely no reason. It's more reason to think your calculator will be sentient.
And achievable things that are guided by the same motivations. Hopefully you found this exploration interesting. Whether or not you've agreed with it, let me know in the comments, and I will see you in the next one.
Again, deserve should have something to do with it. Get what you fucking deserve, you shit-talking sack of goddamn garbage. All right. And what is this a picture of? What the fuck is this? Some lake on Mars? Is that it? Who knows? Who cares? All right, anyway. Fuck. That was unpleasant. So, till then, oh, good. Right on an hour or so. So, not too bad. This is why, I don't really do the community thing. Yeah. Yeah, fuck it. The community of pessimists. So way too many people are pessimistic for all the wrong reasons. So anyway, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Blah, 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 blah.